Blog Talk Radio.
Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing today?
Real good, Don, on this somewhat cool January day. Temperature dropping quite a bit, about 14, 15 degree difference, if you will. And here we are, beginning of the year, and we're also taking a look at Martin Luther King and African-American celebrations and et cetera going on throughout the state over the next, actually the next... Oh, my God, what, 58 days or something like that. But anyways, yeah. A lot of things going on. Now, Don, some criticism, questions with respect to the lack of real meaningful diversity in the cabinet of two-term president, soon-to-be inaugurated President Barack Obama.
Exactly.
A lot of white males and not in many females, not many persons of color. I have to say I'm still a little bit concerned about the way that the president kind of bailed out in the situation, you know, with the American ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice. I thought a very extremely gifted, proficient choice, but the president kind of bailed out. Now, in the case of Chuck Hagel, the former Republican senator out of Nebraska, who, boy, he's got a lot of enemies. He didn't have a lot of friends in the Senate where he served for 12 years or thereabouts. Looks like it's going to be some problems with Chuck Hagel, but it looks like the president is prepared to stand behind Chucky as Secretary of Defense, if you will. It looks like Kerry, who was obviously the second choice for Secretary of State, at least that's what we're being told. By the way, Hillary Clinton, back at work. Last week, you know, we had a discussion and a debate about some of the theories.
Yes.
About her medical condition. I don't subscribe to any of that right-wing hogwash about some kind of secret trip to Iran and airplane crash and such. But clearly, she's a very lucky woman. But I understand we have a guest. Now, we're going to be taking a look, Don, I understand, at some things going on with the Council on Black Minnesotans. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. That is correct. As our listeners know, and you, Mr. Edwards, know, earlier in the week, I had confirmed to interview the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans, which is Mr. Ed McDonald, who is, as far as I'm concerned, a pretty straight shooter, and said that he wouldn't mind going on the air and talking to us about the council and a few other subjects that we brought up when we were meeting in his office. And last night at 11:54 p.m., I received an email that said that he was not approved. He says, I haven't been approved or authorized. Excuse me. Let me use the right words. He hadn't been authorized to be on the air. But in his place, the chairman of the board from the Council on Black Minnesotans, one Mr. Patwin Lawrence, is joining us today, actually right now, to take part in this conversation. And also, Mr. Edwards, before we get to Patwin, Clyde Turner, the executive director of Sabathany Community Center, said that he would also be calling in. So we will expect his call shortly. But I'd like to welcome Patwin Lawrence to On Point. Patwin, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you, Don?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful today. And by the way, our phone lines are open, and the number is 347-426-3904. If you have any questions, again, that number is 347-426-3904. Patwin, if you could tell me, what is the public policy for African-Americans in Minnesota right now as far as the council is concerned?
Well, currently that is under development, Don. We, as you know, last year we had a legacy listening tour where we went across the state. We went to five different cities. We were in Minneapolis, St. Cloud, Duluth, Faribault, and Rochester to listen to community members about the issues that are affecting their daily lives. And so feedback from that that listening, those listening sessions, we had a report done by Dr. Jonathan Rose, and that report is available. Anyone that contacts the council can see the report. That's a summary of all five tours, what we learned, what occurred during those events, and then the recommendations. And it's from those recommendations that we now are going to be formulating our legislative agenda. And so there are five different areas we're going to be focusing on, which is going to be human and civil rights and fair housing, jobs, economic development, health care, criminal justice, and education. And at the upcoming Martin Luther King Day celebration, which is going to be at Central High School, we will be doing a town hall session at the beginning part of that event. So we'll be inviting people who attended the legacy sessions as well as people who didn't to come and to chime in on our legislative agenda so that we can then help the African and African-American communities in the state of Minnesota move forward.
Mr. Edwards.
Yes. My question is, there was this this kind of tour and the extracting of information. Mr. Lawrence, can you tell me what is the agenda for the African population here in the state of Minnesota? Because I noticed there has been some controversy in some quarters that the African community, you know, Liberians, Nigerians, Somalis, and et cetera, mm-hmm. feel that the council, which has been in business, how many years have you been in business, sir?
I believe 30 years.
30 years, okay.
Right around 30, yes.
And the African, indigenous African population, which has come here to our country, have expressed some concerns. Now, are you factoring them into the report that you're giving? Because you're obligated by statute to give this report to the legislature. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And we have factored in the African community. Actually, that was a big part of our listening tour, where at our events where we had a number of African community members, people from Uganda, Sierra Leone, from Mali, Nigeria, Ethiopia, attended our events. We had almost, I believe, 12 or 13 different African nations that were represented by people who were actually born in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they came in, they shared information, particularly Faribault. And Faribault is such an interesting location. That was mainly African immigrants. I was probably one of two or three African Americans that were at that event. And we got to hear from them and the issues that are going on in that community, and they're in such dire need. You know, in that rural community where the mayor has told them specifically, we don't want you in our community. People have been spit on. People have been abused, mistreated. There's all sorts of, you know, family issues going on because there isn't cultural competency with, you know, the in the education system, with the police system down there. And so we've taken these things to heart, and they're going to be a big part of our legislative agenda chiming in. But then also with our legacy funds for 2013, I also chair the Legacy Committee. This is my second year chairing it. We are doing a cultural relations summit, which we're looking to have that in June, which is going to bring the African and African-American communities together. And so with that $100,000 we received from the Humanities Center, we're going to be putting on this two- or three-day conference. And out of that conference, what we're expecting is to bring the communities together so that we can be a more unified community and move the community forward.
I don't want to cut you off, but you want to get to some details and specificity.
Sure.
With that. What's your timeline for doing that, to getting, quote-unquote, getting the community together, compilating the information that they give you? And the reason I ask the question, sir, is that over the last decade or so, there's been problems in places like Rochester, Duluth, and St. Cloud, campuses at Moorhead, and et cetera. And, in fact, I think the former director prior to Mr. McDonald and Mr. Lester Collins and council members at that time had gone out state and had met and had discussed the issues, extrapolated information, and I think made some kind of report to the legislature. Can you give us in you know, 20 seconds or thereabouts a description of what happened with those reports and what has the legislature done and where are the recommendations and the responsible legislature to. I'm specifically going to ask about Rochester, St. Cloud, mm-hmm. and Duluth. Do you know?
The reports of those listening sessions that were held by us this past year, or do you mean back a number of years ago?
No, well, as I said, back in the days, decade ago,
okay.
involving Mr. Collins, who was your executive director at that time,
mm-hmm.
and the meetings in those locations, particularly, just give you a quick example, the Somali community, extremely concerned
mm-hmm.
about what was happening in Rochester, as an example. Problems with race and racism
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
Duluth, as a diverse population was once again returning to Duluth, you know, after many years. So my
mm-hmm.
question was, do you know what happened to the recommendations? What did the legislature do? And can you cite any specific legislative initiatives that were done to deal with those problems that came forth 8, 9, 10 years ago?
And actually, to be honest with you, I cannot. That doesn't mean that nothing was done with those. And that has been a part of the issue with the council, that there's been a lack of follow-up and follow-through with us going visiting communities, saying that we're going to do things and then not acting on it. And so under my term as chair, that's where things are changing. So
under your stewardship, okay.
Forward.
Let me ask you this question also. Who are the legislative representatives on the council nowadays?
Well, currently we only have two. Right now we're supposed to, in our enabling legislation, I believe we're supposed to have four, but we only have two. We have Representative Rena Moran. And
St. Paul, Democrat. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have David Hahn, who's a state senator. And we did have Carol McFarland, but she did not run for reelection, and so she's no longer on our board. So we have two open spots for legislative representatives.
Okay, let me ask you a question now. Mr. Allen, if I may, because we keep the roll going here.
Yes.
You indicated earlier, sir, that, you know, certainly one of the priority issues that you were looking at is jobs, employment, and et cetera.
Yes.
Can you
mm-hmm.
tell us what your role has been as the council and what directives you have given since, and you've indicated that you've been aboard as chairperson for a year. What is the mandate that you've kind of given to yourself as it pertains to one of the largest public works projects in the history of the state of Minnesota, and that is the Viking Stadium? What's being done there? What is Commissioner Kevin Lindsay's proposed plan, 32% minority participation? What does that
mm-hmm.
look like? And what is your position personally as chair of the Council on Black Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
What is your position on that 32% goal?
Well, I think that's a fantastic goal to reach. Personally, what the council is doing, and I know this discussion has come up with our Economic Development Committee, is how to tap into that.
And who is that chaired by, sir, if you could just tell? Who is
that
chaired by?
It's chaired by, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just elected a new slate of people on this past Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
And so that is going to be Mr. Adris Ali, who is our East African representative.
He's your East African representative?
Okay. Representative.
And so he's
–
all right. And so now to the question of the legislation that came out in the early spring of this year, dealing with the stadium and specifically the proposed goals – not so much even for the stadium, but for all projects, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner
mm-hmm.
Kevin Lindsay, 32%. Let me ask you to do this for us, if you could, because you obviously have your copious notes there. Now, of the 32% minority, what will be the breakdown by race? In other words, what percentage of the 32% will be African Americans?
Well, that's a good question for Kevin Lindsay to ask him, or even Edward McDonald. You know,
come on,
be honest with you.
Well, but you know, my question was from the very beginning at the inception was your involvement with that particular.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been involved with anything dealing with the stadium? Do you know anything about it?
I have not personally, but that's one of the things that the council is becoming involved with. Through our committee. So
Was Mr. McDonald, as an example of Mr. McDonald. How long has Mr. McDonald been aboard? About 3-4 months?
Yes, he started October 1st.
Okay. Was he ever given any kind of directive to began discussions and consultation with Commissioner Lindsay and African-American leadership, particularly in Minneapolis, on the Viking Project or the Viking Stadium.
Yes, I know that he has met several times with Commissioner Lindsay and that they have discussed a number of issues in related to human rights, employment issues that is affects the African-American
community. No,
sir.
We don't want to get off point. My question is...
Yeah.
Specifically, the 32% goal enunciated by Commissioner Lindsay in April, March of last year, and then continued reflections during the summer before the Sports Facilities Authority, 32% minorities. Now, my question again was, within the 32% minorities, what is the percentage breakdown for African Americans, Native Americans, Asians, East Africans, West Africans, and et cetera? But at this point, you don't have that at your fingertips, huh?
Yes, I don't, because that's something that you have to ask Kevin Lindsay and how he wants to break that down in his vision. Including minorities, the 32%. You know, you have to talk to him about how he's breaking that down. Now,
so you have no knowledge of that. Okay, would Mr. McDonald be allowed to respond to that if Mr. Allen and myself made inquiry of him?
Oh, absolutely.
Would he?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. All right. Mr. Allen, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Okay. That's great. Great questions. I appreciate you coming on, Patrick. I have a couple more questions. I'm a little bit troubled about the Martin Luther King MLK celebration theme moving moving beyond tolerance to allophilia. And, you know, allophilia is a positive attitude for a group that is not one's own. Now, getting back to that word, that wording, I'm just trying to find out. I talked to a couple of my Native American brothers over this last week, and I don't want to seem bigoted, racist, or anything like that. Martin Luther King Day is a very important day. How did a Native American woman get in charge of or the chair of the Governor Council on Dr. Martin Luther, Reverend King Jr.'s celebration? How does that happen? Is she DFL friendly, or I mean, what's going on here?
As you know, the King Commission, they're appointed by the governor, and so the Martin Luther King Day event is actually the governor's event. It's not the Council on Black Minnesotans event. It's the governor's event. But in past years, because prior to Dayton, because there weren't a lot of involvement from the governor's office in that, that kind of fell upon the Council on Black Minnesotans. And we were also the ones that were helping to bankroll the event. So it came to the appearance that it was the council's event. It's really the governor's event. And so this year, Governor Dayton's office has taken more of the lead in terms of making sure that we understand it's the governor's event. Now, the King Commission, they're the ones that put this event on, and I think that it's fantastic that we did have a Native American woman who's serving as a chairperson. I think, in fact, the Martin Luther King Day celebration should be more diverse, where we include Asians and Latinos, African-Americans, Native Americans, because, you know, that gets back to the spirit of what Dr. King was about. So everybody shares in that, because all of the different so-called minority communities have made advances because of the work of Dr. King.
Okay, and then also I'm looking at the schedule here, 11:15, National Anthem, sung by Mr. Kennedy Barber, the Black National Anthem, sung by Girl Scout Troop 54005. Mm-hmm. I didn't know there were any Black Girl Scout troops. And then the keynote speaker, Commissioner Kevin Lacey, or Lindsay, from the Commissioner of the Department of Human Rights, who we just mentioned a little while ago. How is it that that person that lives on the corner of Glenwood and Penn is going to get this information to participate in this very significant day of Black history, celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday? I mean, how do those people find out?
Well, I know that the King Commission and the committee that's around them that's helping to put on this event is that they have some marketing materials and also they have an outreach plan. So, again, that would actually be a better question for Edward McDonald, who is serving on the King Commission, to be able to tell you those more specifics, or even the chair person, Amanda Norman, would be able to tell you.
Yeah,
more about those specifics.
Yeah, I've reached out to Ms. Norman on two occasions and have not gotten any word back from her. But stand by. We have a caller on hold here. Mr. Warren.
Yes.
You're live on the air. Go ahead, sir. What is your question?
How you doing, Ms. Ellis? First off, I'd like to thank you for the time that you've given me and all the advice. And when I listen to the radio station, you got a lot of work ahead of you. And I don't know, but I appreciate everything you're doing for the black community all over the world, not only up there, but all over the world. Cause you
now,
are
this, this is Mr. Edwards. This is Joseph Warren. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. The
Joe Warren,
man.
It's been me that you've been actually been talking to. But go ahead, go ahead.
Yes. Okay. I talked to you off the air a couple of times.
That's correct.
And,
right.
And I just like to say that I appreciate all the stuff you've done as far as trying to bring an end to my son's case. And
appreciate
as it, I. As I stated to you before, I would like to say publicly on the air that I am offering a $10,000 reward for any information leading to the arrest and the conviction of all persons or people that were involved in my son's case.
All right, Mr. Warren. And let me just add a caveat to that from this caller from Northern Indiana. Mr. Warren initially made that offer after the murder, the brutal murder of his son and his son's friend in a home in North Minneapolis, which maybe is something Council in Black Minnesota may look at under, you know, public safety issue and unsolved cases in the black community. Mr. Warren, Mr. Allen, Mr. Lawrence made that offer, and the Minneapolis Police Department told him that they didn't think that was a good idea. It would cause too much confusion, and it would cause them to get too many calls and have to do too much work.
Exactly.
That happened in 210. This is a cold case in which there's been no progress whatsoever, but I just feel obligated, Mr. Warren, to make sure the public here knows the things that you and your family have done from as far away as Northern Indiana in an attempt to bring justice and resolve the brutal murder of your son and a friend and associate in a home in North Minneapolis. That $10,000 has been out there for almost 3 years, and yet the city of Minneapolis has chosen not to publicize it.
Right.
So I want to thank you again, Joe, for your call and your time.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, I have a question that I want to go back. Our friend, the chairman of the council, is still on the phone with us. Mr. Lawrence, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Still.
Let me ask you this question, because twice we've asked you questions, and you've indicated either, you know, Mr. Lindsay could answer that, or even Mr. McDonald, who apparently was not authorized at this point on this day in the year of our Lord to answer anything. Let me ask you this specific question. What is the status of the African-American Tobacco Trust Fund as we speak? Is it still under the custody and control of the Council on Black Minnesotans? And who is the executive director, and what's the situation there? And my point of reference is the very scathing report by Blue Cross Blue Shield as a part of an audit that they commissioned about a year and a half ago. So could you give us an update and a status as we move into the activities and festivities of Martin Luther King Jr. Month?
Well, again, I would say, you know, you need to follow up with Edward McDonald about the status of that trust fund. I can say is that the report, the council disagrees with that report, because that's really just information that basically came from one specific board member on the council. And that's
really
unfortunate.
Was that who you're talking about, Lucky?
Well, no, I'm not naming any names, but what I'm saying is, you know, it's unfair what happened in that case with
Let
Natalie
me ask you this
Johnson.
Question, sir. I understand what you're saying. Is the executive director of record at the time of the audit, are they still in place?
No.
Oh, okay. All right, then. Thank you. Mr. Allen, you can wrap it up if you desire.
We have a telephone call. The engineer has just waved on. We have someone that wants to ask Mr. Lawrence a question.
Oh, let's do that. Mr. Lawrence, will you stay with us, sir?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Hi, this is Terry Izaguirre from the Minneapolis Mirror and the new site Voice for Diversity in America. And I would like to ask your guest, he stated that they were having issues with African immigrants down in Faribault with such things as being spit on, et cetera, and you were working with these types of situations. Is that correct? Did I hear that right?
Yes, that is correct. When we had our listening session in Faribault, we had about 50 African community members, most of them South Sudanese, some Somalian and Ethiopian. And they told us that the mayor of the community there told them that they were not welcome, that they had been spit on by members of the community, and they've been basically made to feel unwelcome, which is unfortunate because one of the things we learned at Faribault, especially in relation to the Somali community members there, is that Somali community members were coming here to the U.S. to make a better life for themselves, and coming and finding out that they weren't welcome, having all these abuses from community members, particular white community members, they would go back home and they would join Al-Qaeda. So it has become, it's really a national security issue in how we affect the immigrant community, because then when people are coming to recruit them for other purposes, you know, particularly in this case with the Somalians, they can say, well, you know, America's the great Satan. Well, hey, maybe it is. You know, I went there and this happened to me and that happened to me, so then you must be right. And so we really need to do something about those communities.
Okay,
well,
but I think the caller had a specific question.
Madam, go ahead. My question for you, and I know very much about the Somali recruitment, but my question for you is if you're having these listening sessions in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and what you're doing to help the African-American young black men of Minneapolis, St. Paul, with the racial profiling that's occurring, the police brutality that's occurring, the judicial system that is sucking them up faster than they can send them to jail. And I want to know what the council is doing in regards to what's going on right here in our own city on a daily basis.
Yes. And that is actually, although that feedback that you just gave, that has actually come to us through our listening sessions. And so with what we're doing now from those listening sessions last year, we're moving forward at the King Day celebration to have that town hall to get feedback on our legislative agenda that will, you know, include those issues and how to resolve them legislatively. And then we're going to have a day on the Hill, which is going to be, I believe, late February, early March, where we'll be getting African-American community members to go to the Hill to talk with legislators, to talk with the governor about those issues that are affecting their lives, and then moving it forward in terms of the legislature, filling out our legislative mandate. So
not to be rude, but I've attended one of those on the Hill things, and you have the same people in attendance talking to legislation. Are you going to bring the people that are actually affected and have no voice to the Hill?
Exactly, yes, because things are different. Like I've been saying all along, under my leadership, I'm making sure that we are going to be following through on what we say that we're doing. And thus far, we have, where, you know, in the past, there might have been listening sessions that the council has done, and nothing came as a result. You can see specifically in what we're doing now, especially over the next 6 months, we had our listening session, we heard from community members, and now we're taking that information and we're putting it into action moving forward.
How can people get documentation and information on the input and the actual people that were at the listening sessions to see if there were anybody other than the people that, you know, the same suspects that always show up?
Oh, sure. You can actually contact the council office, and we actually have the report. If you want to, it's a 35-page report thereabout, where you can see what occurred during the events, what feedback, and also the names of the people that attended the event also, I believe, have been published as well, because we had to show that we weren't just, you know, making up names and numbers.
Yeah.
Contact the office.
And I'm going to have
thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Izaguirre. One thing I'm going to have to interject here is that, you know, 2 years ago, Pat, when I was in the Council of Black Minnesotans meeting, board meeting, where Lissa Jones, the city of Minneapolis, city attorney, sat, and Miss Rosella sat, and it was a fire. It was a firestorm, and I was told that on Tuesday there was be a possibility of two state troopers being at the Council on Black Minnesota meeting. Did that happen?
Yes, we did move our meeting to the Centennial Building because, to be completely honest, at our December meeting, there was a blow-up by a particular board member, and it was just very insulting and inflammatory. And what's the concerning part of this issue is that we're appointed by the governor, and so we cannot remove board members. As you might know, Don, I tried that back in June. And that really didn't go anywhere because, unfortunately, the powers that be, so to speak, they're afraid to, or I should say unlikely to remove anyone unless they do something very serious, like, you know, if they, you know, kill someone or something like that.
God forbid.
To remove them from the board because of political implications. And that's unfortunate because you can have a board member sit there and threaten violence, call names, be disruptive, and there's nothing that anyone can do.
But let me ask you a question on that, sir. Did you, after the December meeting that you're talking about, did you advise this board member and appointee of the current governor of the state, if you will, per se, did you indicate to them that you were prepared to file charges of terroristic threats against them?
Or individuals.
Oh, you didn't do anything on that? Did you inform the St. Paul police that these terroristic threats had been made?
No, because these recommendations actually came from admin. Actually, that because the state, they want to mitigate their liability if something should occur. You know, this occurred, you know, right before we had the school shooting, if I'm not mistaken.
In Newtown, Connecticut, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it happened on the 11th. Our board meeting was on the 11th. So now with that happening,
that's the same day.
Everyone's concerned about, you know, if something happens and the liability, it was recommended that we meet.
Sure. Let me ask you one additional question, and then it'll be the final one I'll ask because actually you've been good enough to be with us for 25 minutes.
Yes, sir.
You made a reference just minutes ago in response to the last caller about homeland security issues, and of course we're all extremely anxious when we hear things about homeland security and, you know, violation of America's safety. You said that what was happening in Faribault was being used as a tool, and that's my particular word, that wasn't your word, that's what was implied, it was being used as a tool for recruitment by Al-Qaeda. Now, did you and have you passed, number one, that on to the governor, and by extension, have you asked the FBI to open a case file?
Well, we have not done that because they are already aware of that.
The FBI is already aware?
Yeah. They're already aware that this is going on. Like, with Faribault, you know, that's just an example. This is going on, you know, all across the country.
Oh,
where
you were talking
immigrants
about a universal spectrum.
Yeah, I see.
Okay.
But it specifically did happen where Somali community members were being, you know, mistreated in Faribault and then going back home. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir. Yeah. Mr. Allen, you want to wrap it? Thank our guests for being with us.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on the air with us. You know, we had asked Scott Gray at the Minneapolis Urban League, who said that he was told not to be on the air with people like me and Mr. Edwards. And we did ask, you know, Ed McDonald, but, you know, he said, you know, you're here in his place, I guess, because Ed didn't have authorization. And we also asked Mr. Clyde Turner, who said he would call in at some point during this 90-minute program. And so I appreciate you taking the time out to answer some questions for us. And it's just, I know that right now the sunset is ever looming for the Council on Black Minnesotans. I know there's some talk in April or June, if I'm not mistaken, one of those months. And and it's time for the council to actually perform and do something of significance so that we can see what's happening. And so with that said, I'd like to thank you very much for tuning in or calling in today, and maybe you'll give us an update here right before June. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Right. Thank you, sir.
That's great.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Allen, let me do this because you just made a statement about sunset, and it was not just a loose metaphor, if you will. Could you just enlighten our listening audience domestically and internationally what you were talking about?
Okay, well, the state legislature decided that they were wasting a lot of money. They were wasting a lot of money, especially with the Black Council on Black Minnesotans, when all this arguing was going on. I was actually in meetings, Mr. Edwards, where I was putting up YouTube videos of them nearly at fisticuffs.
Okay. Yeah, I well remember those. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so with that said, it's like, are these councils, a couple of the legislators got together and said, are these councils really fulfilling the mission that they set out to fulfill? And so the first sunset hearing, I think, was last year for the Council on Black Minnesotans, which basically said that, hey, we're going to look at this in June of 2013 and see if you've done anything significant to affect Black Minnesotans. You know, God forbid, you know, that they get sunset, but what will we really miss?
Yeah. Let me also do this for our listening audience and any additional calls. We want to now send out a shout-out, if you will, to Ed McDonald, the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans, because his boss, Mr. Lawrence, the chairman of the Council on Black Minnesotans, indicated that we should ask. We certainly don't have access to Kevin Lindsay, but, you know, we'll certainly do that. But he specifically indicated twice that Mr. McDonald should be the person to answer the question. So I'm going to encourage Ed to feel free to give us a call.
Yeah, that would be good.
And answer a couple of the questions that were posed to the chairperson of the Council on Black Minnesotans that he deferred and referred to Mr. McDonald. Mr. McDonald, I sense that was a clarification and an authorization, if you will, for you to speak on the public record about some of the questions that we posed that the chair of the council was not able to answer. So I repeat again, Ed, if you're listening in, and we imagine that you are, we encourage you now. You've been released from confinement, if you will. And we encourage you to give us a call.
And Mr. Edwards, we have a call.
All right, let's get it.
We have another call here.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, caller, you're live on the air. May I ask who we're speaking with? Hello? You're live on the air, 206? Okay, they can't figure that out. And we have another caller on the air.
Well, let's get him. Let's get him in.
Ma'am, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, yes, this is Trish calling from Minneapolis.
Hey, mm-hmm. Trish, how are you?
Yeah, all right, and you? Yes, I was calling in regard to my nephew once again because I'm still concerned about his case.
Mm-hmm.
Anton Warren and Ramon Stevens.
Mm-hmm.
I had called and did a check update on what's going on with the case, and they had told me that they still haven't found anything, and I was like, well, I'm pretty sure you had got names and things like that. They know who's all involved in this stuff, you know, and I just really wish in my heart that they solved this case. We know who done this, but they mm-hmm. claim that they don't have no proof, you know, and I just really wish somebody that's come forward and tell the truth and tell what's really going on, even though we all know that it was his friends and stuff involved and his females involved also.
Yeah,
that was in the home. That was in the home when they got killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also I had...
Go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Also, I had hung up a bunch of posters and stuff, you know, of his reward thing, you know, the $10,000 reward.
Mm-hmm.
I hung them in gas stations on Broadway, restaurants and stuff. So I go back to, you know, check on them to see, mm-hmm. you know.
And they're gone.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I said, did you guys take this down? They said, no, some tall, light-skinned boy came and ripped them off.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
okay.
I said, oh, wow, you know, mm-hmm. that's really ridiculous, you know.
Well, let me make a suggestion to you from this end, as we've done over the last 7 or 8 weeks. I would suggest in that we have a new chief of police here in the city of Minneapolis, a female, Jane Hartow. And, of course, the mayor doesn't have any political capital to lose because he's not going to run again. I would strongly suggest that you reach out to the chief of the police department and the mayor, and ask
okay.
for a closed meeting involving family members and any individuals that the family invites for a meeting
okay.
with the department and with the mayor. The mayor's the police department is one of actually only two departments that actually reports to the mayor of this city under the Minneapolis City Charter. The other one is the fire department. Mm. So
okay.
The mayor is the direct supervisor, quote unquote. See, we don't have a police commission or a police commission board, et cetera. The chief reports directly to the mayor of the city. And so I would strongly suggest that that be done. You're free to call me in a private conversation, and I certainly will put you in contact specifically with the persons that make the mayor's appointments and et cetera. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that, as I said before, in that this mayor is departing at the end of this year, he doesn't have any spent capital, if you will. He will, you know, won't upset the police federation or et cetera.
Okay.
And this chief is his personal appointee and selective appointee, if you will. And so I would encourage you to begin to talk amongst yourselves, both here and outstate, and talk in terms of a formal request to the chief of the department,
okay.
Janae Harto, and Mayor R.T. Ryback. Okay?
Oh, okay, yes, because something needs to be done about this. And I also spoke with the young lady. I'll give you the name a little later on at the time, but I had
Oh, I think I know who it
her.
Is, but we will
mm-hmm.
certainly do that. Okay?
Okay, okay.
All right.
I still will.
All right.
And thank you,
miss.
So much.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. By the way, this is clearly a situation where there is great passion. You know, oftentimes we as black folk are criticized, even by our own leaders in their conversations with white folks. White folks do it all the time, that we are not about follow-through, if you will, and, you know, that's the reason things don't get done. It's quite clear in this specific situation with the murders of Warren and Stevens, that these families are absolutely committed, passionately, if you will, and respectfully, Mr. Allen, to bring justice to the tragic, brutal murders of these two young African American men. And so I just have to say that on the occasion of Martin Luther King Jr. and his dream and his vision, and of course his utterances and respect for the tenaciousness of the African American community, because it's quite clear these families have made their minds up that somebody is going to be answerable for these tragic murders. Okay, just needed to say that as an editorial piece. You know
yes.
what I'm saying?
Yes, not a problem at all, Mr. Evers.
Okay.
Yeah. And
any other calls? We don't want to. We don't want to let any calls slip by, because
no, not at all. And I'll give that number out again. It's 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Give us a call. The phone lines are open, Mr. Evers. We need to. I think we need to go back and talk about the Viking Stadium. So I heard you talking with Mr. Lawrence there. Now, do you mean that there'll be 32% African Americans working on the stadium?
Oh no, Don, no. And I was
a little
disappointed that the chairperson, who has direct contact with our Democratic governor, did not realize that is a factor, if you will, that factor being that we don't even know if the African-American participation within the 32% what it will be. And by the way, I didn't bother. I don't think he's an attorney. I don't know that if he's an attorney or not. But there is a constitutional issue that is emerging. I would encourage people to read my column in the Spokesman Recorder, the largest and most effective black newspaper in Minnesota, because in my column that will be published on Wednesday, I raised the constitutional issue of a 32% quote-unquote quota, okay, because the white Contractors Association here in Minnesota and others are maintaining that Commissioner Lindsay's proposed 32% minority goal is nothing but a quota. There has never been a number that large, quota or otherwise, that's ever been imposed on any quote-unquote entity, business or otherwise, in the history of the United States of America. And I'm afraid, Mr. Allen, that what's going to happen is that if, in fact, the Sports Facility Authority and the Minnesota Vikings have even given any consideration to what's being proposed by the commissioner, that there are significant and very powerful forces here in the state of Minnesota that are prepared to contest that and take it all the way to the United States Supreme Court. Now, also, I think it's important that we need to know that, and you and I were in a meeting this past summer with a representative of the Metropolitan Council. I'm talking about an elected, or in this case, appointed member. I'm puzzled if, in fact, how our the two representatives who are under contract to the Sports Facility Authority and the Vikings, how they have incorporated those statistical percentages into the 32% minority. I've heard no discussion whatsoever publicly by them or by quote-unquote leadership that allegedly has been meeting and discussing how this will take place. If you follow me, Mr. Allen,
yes, I think you
do, and I think the listening audience does. But to your specific question, sir, there is no evidence, empirical evidence, that there are goals within the goal. And understanding that by interpretation of the United States Supreme Court, that minorities represent just about everybody in the free world.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So consequently, in our column, in my column in the Spokesman Recorder, as well as my television program that will air tomorrow on our cable network here, MTN, I raised the question, what percentage within the 32% has been set aside for African Americans? Is it 12%, 11%, 15%? I mean, what is the amount? Is it 32% of 32%, if you understand what I'm saying? And I find it fascinating that no one has even been prepared to address that.
Yeah, and Mr. Edwards, you know, setting minority participation goals for state contracts, some people say that's unconstitutional, saying it violates the Equal Protection Clause under the 14th Amendment.
Absolutely, sir.
So we have a huge issue here with these guys going around singing Dixie, talking about 32% and all these jobs are coming in the community.
You think that's an appropriate tune, Dixie? I mean, that reminds me of Bilbo. But go ahead, Don.
You know, but you know, and
nice hit on him.
Thank you. And we have not had a our two elected senators and our congressperson have not sat down to the table to discuss the Viking Stadium or even let the community members understand what the significance of this public works project
is. You're absolutely on point. In a conversation, which, of course, for purposes of confidentiality, I will not go into great detail, I spoke with the chairperson of the Facilities Authority, and as you know, having been involved in the meeting this past summer, one of the questions I asked her was, would there at least be one public hearing to take a look at the equity plan that was so highly touted in this city by the Ryback administration and Velma Corvell and others before Ms. Corvell, somewhere or another, signed off and gave the responsibility for the equity plan to Wanda Kirkpatrick and the Met Council. I was specifically told that not only would there not be any public hearing, but I want to give these dates to our friends and buddies and others who are listening, and it's the following. First of all, the six companies have been selected. I refer people to the websites of the major white media here, as well as a very, very small article in this morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Three of them are from Minnesota, none of them really having the capabilities to build an NFL-specified stadium, if you will.
Yes.
The other three are all companies that have done business with the NFL, okay? Three Minnesota companies have, quote-unquote, not done business with the NFL, and they've certainly not done business with Ziggy Wealth and his family, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is that the equity plan is to be unveiled. Initially, it was going to be unveiled this coming Friday, but the decision was made that because also they were going to unveil, which they did in advance, the six companies who are the finalists for the $753 million contract. I just couldn't believe when I listened to the chairman of the Council on Black Minnesotans that he would tell us, and he would tell the listening audience nationally and internationally, that he didn't have any information that we should go talk to Kevin Lindsay or we should go talk to Ed McDonald, who has been told he can't talk to us, okay?
Yeah, and also, Mr. Edwards, for the record, those firms are the Gilbane Building Companies based in Providence, Rhode Island, Hunt Construction based in Scottsdale, Arizona, Krauss Anderson based in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Kofler Construction based in Lakeville, Minnesota, and Mortenson Construction based in Minneapolis, and Kamka based in Parsippany, New Jersey.
New Jersey.
These are actually the firms that came to the pre-proposal meeting.
That's right, with their proposals. And the New Jersey company, by the way, has been a company which has had a long and close relationship with the Vikings' current representative under law, representing the Vikings' interest in the construction of the stadium. Jim Chura is his name. Very nice gentleman. We've talked to him a number of occasions. Jim Chura comes to us from the East, and he comes from that Pacific operation, if you will. So you figure it out as best you can. But the dates are the following. For those out there, get your pencils out. What the way this will happen is that on the 18th now, they're talking in terms of the formal announcement will be made at the meeting of the facilities meeting on Friday morning at around 9 o'clock. And then a couple days later, the presentation of the so-called or discussion on the equity plan will kind of be made. That's the plan that members of the staff of the Metropolitan Council are involved in, which is a conflict of interest under the law. That will be introduced, if you will. Now, I was at a meeting a couple days ago along with Mr. Alfred Flowers and at least 25 other people, contractors. And I was a little disappointed that on the agenda was stadium update, an update on the stadium, the negotiations that allegedly we've all been told have been going on with respect to, you know, participation by people of color on the stadium. And what happened, a gentleman by the name of Kennedy, who I think you're familiar with, Mr. Allen,
mm-hmm.
had shown up. In fact, he came in. He had his Minnesota Gopher hat on and a Minnesota Gopher jacket. You know, so much for his loyalty to the Vikings. I'm just, you know, being nasty there. But anyways, he made a decision that the right element was not present in the room there at UROC. And what he did, he left. And so there was never any presentation. And so, you know, the black contractors and others have no idea that it's going to be pretty tough for them to get any kind of play. Now, you know, we made this warning to our listening audience and our viewing audience, both through this program and our column and on our television program, when they selected the architect, for $40 million. And the architectural firm out of Dallas does not have any relationship whatsoever with anything that looks like either one of us. And Mr. Allen and I are both African Americans, okay? And so I'm just saddened by what is happening, and I find it troubling because here's what is going to happen in a couple days. The legislation, and certainly someone may want to give us a call and ask us to be even more specific. We just love that, but we've written about it and talked about it. The legislation that created, quote-unquote, the People's Stadium and allocated all that money, better than $1 billion, that's what it be, insisted that there be an annual report by the Sports Facilities Authority to a super commission of the Minnesota Legislature comprised of 12 members, six from each of the two houses and three from each side of the aisle, right? Well, I'll be doggone if on the 15th, which is an interesting date, isn't it, as pertains to Martin Luther King Jr., right?
Yeah.
The report will be given to the super commission without commentary or without public discussion.
Mm.
Now think about it. A report which will include how well, quote unquote, we're doing on diversity will be given to the super committee of the Minnesota legislature 3 days before the equity report is unveiled and a 2 weeks before the prime company or prime construction management firm is selected to control this $753 million package, Mr. Allen. Now, I was puzzled by that, and I had been expecting that leadership in our community, including the Council on Black Minnesotans, Kevin Lindsay and others, would have certainly raised a question about the timing, because timing is everything, right, Mr. Allen?
Yes, yes, it is.
So the listening audience needs to know that the report to the Super Commission of the Minnesota Legislature will be made on the 15th. A copy of the so-called equity plan done by somebody, I don't know who it was, though Wanda Kirkpatrick and her associate were paid to do it. Oops. And if anyone dare challenges, I have the minutes of the meeting, as well as I was in the meeting when that decision was announced. And then the formal discussion on the timeline, which will be 2 weeks for the selection of the construction management firm, and then that announcement will be made on February 1st. And, of course, groundbreaking begins in October. Now, finalizing, Mr. Alvin, very quickly, unless, and I did ask this question, and I was told that there is an understanding, unless the language of diversity, participation, et cetera, is incorporated in the contract language of the RFPs, there is no legal ground for the company that is the recipient of the $753 million contract to do anything other than what the legislation says. Make a good faith effort.
Wow. You know, that means absolutely nothing. Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
Let's get the caller.
Thanks there for holding, sir, your name and your question or comment.
Brother James.
Hey, Brother James.
Brother James, how you doing, my brother?
Okay, how y'all doing? I got
all
two
right.
questions. First of all, back to the Council of Black Minnesotans. How is it a black council when you got white handlers in the background dictating to how they want the blacks to present to other blacks, and they know all of these malfeasance that's going on in the city with us in human rights and civil rights, and then you get these Urkel-type cats on the phone, oh, I can't talk to this guy. Oops, I got to go into this guy. And then there's another question with the contractors. We just had a contractor that got contracted out with downtown Minneapolis with Lion Construction Company that caused a serious water damage leak downtown there. And if that had been a black contractor contracted out to do that, they would have been marched off that job the same day. And nobody said anything.
You're absolutely correct, James, on
said,
both of those.
The mayor said they owe us some money.
Yeah, probably millions of dollars when you talk about
the damages. And how much is the damages? But ain't nobody said who they really are, but Ryan Construction Company contracted them in, and guess what else? They're playing the blame game now. Oh, who did it? Oh, whether the pipe was old or what's going on? It seems like it's the same old puppet, the same old game. And thanks to you two, Brother Pinback and Brother Pullback, y'all have pulled back the veil of secrecy and all the malfeasance that goes on in these meetings. So now only thing they're doing is they finding them some new $50 hairdo on some nickel heads with the same old scripts. On that note, now back to the mysterious roving thug snitches that they got coming in and out of the city, that bringing them in from northwestern Indiana and places like that. These fools work for law enforcement. They work for law enforcement where they was coming from, and they're working for law enforcement here. That's why don't nobody get nothing done.
Ooh.
On that note, I'm up.
Thank you, brother. Oh, what Brother James said is absolutely correct. These roving confidential informants, in fact, they call them CCIs, actually.
Mm-hmm.
These are certified, Don Allen. These are certified confidential informants. And in the case of the murder, the vicious, brutal murder of Mr. Warren and Mr. Stevens here in April of 2010, the individuals that were actually involved in the murder were actually certified federal informants.
Yeah, that's why there's nothing being done.
Yeah, in fact, if people who want to challenge us, go back and listen, what was it, 7 weeks ago,
yes,
to the first call that we got from the Warren family. They talked about a brother who's in the federal penitentiary down in Indiana who got violated because he was selling guns out in the white community, but he was violated, but he was very much, this person was very much involved in the murder execution style of Mr. Warren and Mr. Stevens. And he was a confidential informant. Everybody in town knew it. In fact, one of the reasons that he was not dealt with here and was told to get back out of here, get back down 94, was because it would have been an embarrassment to the DEA. So, hey, Brother James is on point. But these are things we're not supposed to talk about, Mr. Allen.
No, I'm not supposed to say a word. You know, I was really curious, Mr. Edwards, what is the role of the National Association of Minority Contractors? And I think I just came across the number of Francis, who is the chairman of the board, much like the same capacity that Pat when Lawrence plays with the
Yeah, didn't you try to call him a couple weeks ago and didn't get no answer?
Yeah, I'm going to try again here. We're going to try to call
By the way, it appears that I noticed you said 90 minutes. We're going another 30 minutes?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good enough. And then we want to give that number if the good brother answers it, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then, let me see here. Let's give it another ring. Let's see if he answers the phone. He could be listening and ain't thinking about picking up the phone.
Oh, okay. Well, you know there's been a leadership.
You have reached the Sprint voicemail box of
6512.
Just cut it off.
We have to point out that the leadership as of 3 months ago of the Minority Contractors of Minnesota, that leadership was purged.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both Mr. Steele, who was the president, was purged, and Mr. Woods, who was the executive director, were purged. So Mr. Woods seemed to have been reinstated, and then one of them big white law firms got involved, and they came up with something about the bylaws and said that different people couldn't vote, and Mr. Woods was ousted again, if you will. And so the reason for that leadership change was to maintain as much of a cloud over the so-called negotiations pertaining to equity and diversity on the Viking Stadium. And by the way, for our national and international listeners, we're talking about a $1 billion project. We're not talking about, you know, nickels and dimes, as Brother James pointed out. We're talking about a $1 billion project with cost overruns estimated at about $260 to $280 million. So this is about a $1.3 billion project here in our beloved Shangri-La.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot
of
money.
Give that phone number, Mr. Alvin, in case we've got 29 more minutes to go.
Yes, we do. That number is 347-426-3904. Mr. Turner, if you're out there listening, come on, call in. Scott Gray, I don't know how hard it was to pick up a phone, but, you know, Mr. Edwards, I think Mr. Gray might be down in Madison tending his Subway franchise he has down there.
What does he have, one or two?
I'm not sure. If it's more than one, you know, I'm wondering how come he didn't bring that model to Minneapolis and help some of these young entrepreneurs open up their franchises.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Because, you know, Subway is extremely popular and seemed to have a good profit sheet, if you will. And when I, you know, heard about that a couple of years ago, I kind of wondered, you know, if that kind of entrepreneurship was going to be provided. I know they're having some electrical problems over there, by the way. Electricians over there working as we speak, you know, electrical problems in the building because of the cracks in the floor and the sludge and stuff coming up, you know, the poor construction of the building over there.
Mm-hmm.
That building's just a little over 10 years old, if I'm not mistaken, even that much. But
anyways,
hopefully, you know, give us a call, feel free. Oh, but that's right, he said he was told not to talk to us. A lot of people are being told not to talk to us. We're not very popular.
No. Well, they don't understand. We're not trying to win a popularity contest, you know?
That's right. By the way, let me end that. We have 27 minutes. Let me give us an update on the Mario Booker situation, and then I have an update on the very courageous president of the Minneapolis NAACP, Booker Hodges, not to be confused with the Mario Booker. Mr. Booker is still incarcerated at the federal holding facility at Elk River, Minnesota, which is north of here. And his case and beating and near death at the hands of Minneapolis police officers has been put totally on hold as federal authorities negotiate a arrangement with him in which he will be allowed to plead guilty to what could be a 15-year sentence in exchange for dropping everything, if you will. I think it's really a sad situation, man.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. By the way, also want to report on, and then I'll go to the president of NAACP, report on Thursday night, a beating of four young African-Americans, two male, two female, from our black Peruvian community. People tend not to know that we have black Peruvians here in our beloved city. Were jumped and beaten by security personnel at MOA and, in fact, taken into the basement. Kind of reminded me of the old days of City Center. Taken into the basement and beaten. One young lady, maced point blank, had a blood reaction. You know, that's when things happen. You bleed profusely and et cetera. And so that's something that's being looked at right now. There will probably be litigation. They were set up. A white female maintained that they had stolen her cell phone. Later, the cell phone was found on the couch way across the room at a sports bar there on the top floor of MOA, if you will. But they were severely beaten by personnel. Just a warning to you young African-Americans, be careful because you got a target on your back at MOA.
We got a big target out there.
That's right. Yeah. By the way, a move afoot to attempt to oust the beloved president, the strong young president of the Minneapolis Urban League, the Minneapolis NAACP, Booker Hodges, an attempt to oust him, going right up to the national because of questions and issues that he has raised about corruption within black leadership and corruption within institutions. Just thought I'd pass that on. Yeah, y'all out there, we're aware of what you tried to do to the young brother.
Yeah, that's crazy. Hey, we have another call coming in.
Let's get them. Let's see if they get through. Bring them in.
Oh, you know, they hung up as quick as they called in. I'm sorry, the engineers just flagged me off on that one.
Okay.
But there is something. I want to make a statement, Mr. Edwards, real quick here, since we have like a few more, 15 or 25 minutes, actually. And the thing is, you know, it's very hard to question these individuals, especially if they're connected with the DFL here in Minnesota. I know that I've sent out data privacy requests to the NFL, to the DFL, to ask about the money distributed during the campaign. And I talked with Mr. Corey Day, who said that, well, he wasn't going to send that out. So I have no choice other than to send that to the state legislative auditor to see what kind, and also Rebecca Otto, to see if we can get some kind of traction on that request that was formally sent out in letter form to the Minnesota DFL.
Okay.
Secondly, it seems like that, you know, people, some of the African-Americans in the community or the black community here in the Twin Cities don't want to interrupt friendships at all.
Absolutely. Well, we know that. Yes.
And so that's Martin Luther King said something about, you know, we're not going to, you know, remember our enemies, but we'll remember the silence of our friends.
Yes, absolutely.
This community has become deathly silent in the last.
Tone deaf to justice. Oops, the pursuit of justice. Tone deaf to the pursuit of justice. Mm-hmm.
So with that said, you know, we have to figure out a way to incorporate another move on them to make them start being accountable. I mean, there's a lot of craziness going on, and people are not, you know, there's no justice. The Minneapolis Public Schools education, you know, no one has said, I guess the grades, another test was taken, and we're soon to get the results on that for the Minneapolis Public Schools, and I don't really think the children are doing any better. I mean, I've talked to some people involved in that, and said they don't expect any difference.
Well, we go with a two-part story in our column in the very prestigious Minnesota Spokesman Recorder this past week. It's online on my website and et cetera, but, you know, we won't belabor all that. We are dealing with two frightening, chilling situations, Minneapolis School District and Bloomington. In Bloomington, they have embarked on a policy of denying educational access to black children as young as 7 years old. And you have a son, Don, who is probably, you know, about 4 years away from being, you know, a little toddler going into the public school system or whatever you and, you know, your wife choose. But the fact of the matter is, in this situation in Bloomington, they actually went as far as telling the guardian that this child is in the custodial control of a court-appointed guardian, that if she sent the little black terrorist to the school, they would suspend him immediately, which is very capricious and arbitrary and illegal and et cetera. But it's happening with greater frequency. I just received a call about 2 hours ago from a civil rights associate of mine who has a nephew in the Roseville School District. This young African-American, though he's older, if you will, 13 or 14, but by law he has to be educated,
Yeah.
Roseville School District said if you send him out here, if he tries to come back to school, even though you have administrative processes to do that, that they would not only suspend him, but because of his age, they would put the police on him. I mean, at least I guess they're not going to do that with the small black children in Bloomington. I guess the police wouldn't beat them to death. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know. But I would encourage the listeners to certainly take a look at some of our publications, if you will, Mr. Allen, myself, and maybe a few others. But there is an education crisis in this state, and particularly in the Twin Cities. I appreciate what the caller, James, pointed out, is that the miseducation of the Negro continues. And you're right, Mr. Allen, people are talking in terms of affiliations, be they friendship or fraternal or things like that. You know what I mean? We belong to the quote-unquote same fraternal organization, or we frat brothers or sorority sisters or whatever, so we don't want to say anything about what's going on. And I'm just knocked off. I'm knocked back by the justification that people are putting into play. Back to I don't want to embarrass my friend, you know what I mean, kind of thing. So you know, you're absolutely on point, but this education thing is extremely dangerous, chilling, and it is a defeating part of what happens in society. It defeats everything that you as a parent do to encourage your child to be the best that they can be.
Yeah, I agree. We have a caller.
Mr. All right, let's see if we can get them.
Yes. Caller, you're live on the air. Mass is calling.
Brother James.
Brother James, go right here, sir. Yes.
Okay, about these here school situations and these shootings, did you all ever notice the only reason why we're getting all this here media coverage is because these are Caucasian kids?
Absolutely.
And not only are they Caucasian kids, but these are kids that got issues prior to coming to school, and there is no mention of that situation up there in Sandy Hook where the mother was basically teaching this kid how to kill at the gun range, knowing that he had some mental health issues. Now we got the same group of people here running to Washington. We got a sheriff running to Washington hollering about some money. We just had a gun summit just the other day at the mayor's office, but there was nobody in the room. There was gunshot victims. There was nobody in the room that was, like Ms. Yaziri said, that was needed to be there to express their feelings. We got one of the most psychological technique plantations in the country right here, and with you all show this hitting all around the country, I'm surprised that we don't have a bunch of congressional Negroes on buses like they used to do in the 60s to come here and ask us what's really going on.
And I think, Brother James, that is an excellent observation and recommendation. I will certify it as a recommendation from you. I've always encouraged people to come here because I've told them that this is the citadel where we reside here in Minnesota. We are the citadel of racism, okay? It is not practiced any better anywhere in the world, including South Africa in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, than it is practiced here in Minnesota, okay?
Because 95% of it is psychological technique. We get these so-called miseducated Negroes in here calling themselves leaders who don't have one leadership ability, and the only thing they want to do is get their pockets lined, get them some sponge rubber, Kleplo dollar suits, and then they run around talking about their representatives, but they don't have not one ounce of civil rights history in their head.
Absolutely.
Can't even read or write.
I know.
But they tell you they're your leader.
I'll do this on your watch. You just made me remember something that I had made a commitment to do over the air, Mr. Allen, and Brother James actually jogged my memory again. We have so many things. I want to make those of you in our listening audience here in Minneapolis and in Twin Cities there aware that there will be no African Americans hired in the new so-called recruitment hiring of the Minneapolis Fire Department. What happened was the Ryback administration and members of the Minneapolis City Council signed off on an arrangement in which all African Americans on the eligibility list were pushed to the bottom, and the top 10 positions are Caucasian males. Thank you, Brother James, because I had made a promise to the Black Firefighters Association that I at least would report that.
if you will.
Remember, this is the Stepping Fetchit show, and thanks to you two, you all have gotten rid of a lot of these house Negroes, and what they're doing now, they're looking for new recruits, soft shoe peddlers, paper pushers, and, you know, oh, I just want to get along, go along to get along, and whatever you tell me to do, Mr. Handler, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I'm sick of them type of Negroes.
Yeah, go you're absolutely right,
sir. Go back to the south of Mississippi and get under that what they call that Mississippi mud dirt and bury yourself. Yeah.
Mississippi burning. Okay. All right. Thank you, Brother James.
Pleasure.
Right. Interesting observation by Brother James about folks need to get on the bus and the train and the plane and come on up here to see how we do it up here in Minnesota, how we keep our foot on the neck of the Negro here in Minnesota, because, man, these folks do it. And as Brother James said, and Brother James is clearly a beacon of honest reflection. You know, folks can say whatever they want to say, but he is a reflection, along with other callers that we've had, a reflection of that. It's interesting what is happening, but I want to go back very quickly to let folks know, anyone want to make a call to the guru and ask the question, they just cut a deal for African-American Firefighter Association, just found it out and realized it. They altered the list. See, they did the same thing in the police department, Don.
Okay.
About 6 months ago, and black police officers tried to reach out, though they've been so disillusioned by the leadership who stabbed them in the back a couple years ago. So what happened was the Black Firefighters Association found out that the list had been altered. So for all those of y'all that have been out there at the Spruce and different places like that, bending your elbow, drinking that good brandy and scotch and et cetera, talking about that my nephew and et cetera is going to be a firefighter. He will not be a firefighter in this parallel universe, okay? Maybe there's another universe somewhere that if he can step into, he may become a firefighter, okay? You will not be a black firefighter in Minneapolis, Minnesota, okay? And we used to have one of the most diverse fire departments in the United States by number. That's the reason that Chief Alex Jackson, quote-unquote, was pushed out and by Mayor R.T. Ryback, nobody said a word, now. Not a single city council member, nobody. Some of the same people that said they want to run to be your mayor.
Yeah, exactly. And we have another call, Mr. Everett.
Let's get the caller. Let's get him.
Hi, this is Patlin Lawrence again. I've been listening.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say that in hearing people calling in and commenting, what I'm not hearing people say is how can the individual citizen and people be empowered. Everyone looks up to their leaders. Everyone think waiting for superhero or Superman instead of thinking, how can I be empowered myself? It's really the job of our leaders in the community to empower everyone in the community to be a leader. And unfortunately, that isn't happening. And it's for the people in the community to rise up and say, hey, well, then I don't like what you're doing. You don't represent me. And for the individual citizens to take charge. And this is a really serious time. I've heard you guys talking about education. You know what? The education system isn't broken. It's working just exactly as it's designed to work. It's not designed to create thinkers. It's not designed to help elevate people to the next level and to move on. It's actually designed to create good workers. It's not designed to help people to think, because if you look at your average public school system and then you look at private schools where the so-called elites and their kids, they're educated in an entirely different format, entirely different manner. It's completely different, but yet when they're
Mr. Lawrence, let me ask you a question here during the occasion of Martin Luther King Month and the presence of the Negro in this state since, you know, it was a territory. Don't you think that a significant number of African Americans already know that? I mean, they understand what you're saying, and I have to do this to correct you on this. I know a lot of people, man, that are trying to do a self-lonely battle as it pertains to their rights. They are trying to ascend the positions of leadership and et cetera. And in fact, actually, if you listen really closely and you go back and listen to some of the descriptions that we've given them, some events that have just been happening. Let me give you an example, man. You asked the question, the Warren family. I mean, you heard them. They did a lot of things. Anytime a family comes together with the resources, and I know that this family is not a well-endowed family financially, anytime that a father, brother, can reach and take $10,000 out of his savings and pension
to find murderers of his son 3 years ago. I don't know that there's many more things that you can do. When you talk about a man that traveled here from northern Indiana to meet with the police in an attempt to get them moving as it pertains to the death of his son, I don't know. I would encourage you to read my column as it pertains to the Bloomington School District, where a very courageous guardian ad litem, and, you know, you work for a company, you work for Target, if I'm not mistaken, where a very courageous guardian ad litem has fought a courageous battle against the Bloomington School District as it pertains to a seven-year-old African-American child in her care. I know all kinds of people. We don't even have enough time to talk in terms of African-Americans in these cities that have done everything that they can. The problem is that there are no elections, quote-unquote, for Negro leaders. You know what I mean? And I think you need to be just a tad careful. I know you're a younger man than I am. Okay, but you need to be a tad careful when you talk in terms of a Arab Spring, or in this case, a Black Spring, okay, because there is enough anger out here as we speak amongst the masses that some things could happen that we would all consider to be very tragic and be very uncomfortable with as it pertains to how people are feeling, because there's some folks out here that, you know, if they decided that they wanted to ruin their life forever, they would make some of these leaders disappear. Okay?
Okay.
So I just want to say that to you, sir, because I really take exception to your statement that the African-American masses need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, if you will, and get out and do something. There was a time that that was done, how the system, and that we're doing history lessons here, how the system dealt with that. They went out and got Negroes, paid them, put them in suits, and had them go out and undermine the prestige and the honesty and the integrity and the transparency of the movement. That's why there is no civil rights movement in this country as we speak.
Well, yes, I understand. I was a history major.
Do you?
I understand all of that.
Oh, he's a history major.
African-American history was my minor. So, but I understand all that. But what I'm saying
it was mine, too, at the University of Syracuse. Yeah, I got you. Yeah, I know all about that.
We need to empower. We need to empower our community members that are going to come together and work towards a common goal. Because now things are getting serious. If you look at this gun issue, I mean, that's very serious for our community. At my last board meeting, we had people come in talking about ways that they can take guns away from citizens. And I'm a native of South Carolina. Everyone in my family, we all own firearms.
All right, I used to hang out around Sumter, South Carolina. You know where Sumter is?
Columbia, yep.
You're doggone right. Yeah, I used to hang out down around Sumter. Love that country down
and
there.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is things are getting very serious, because if we lose our gun rights and in this country over what has happened in Connecticut and then whatever else might happen, that's going to have serious implications for the Black community, because the white community, they're buying guns like they're going out like they're going out of style. So they're going to have weapons. We won't. So we need to come together and think of reasonable, rational ways of moving our community forward in an effective manner. So that's all I wanted to say.
Pat Patwood, don't hang up. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
We got a caller for you, Mr. Lawrence. Go ahead, caller.
This is Brother James, and I'm glad that caller is done called back. He said that he's been from North Carolina.
South Carolina.
And he just got up here, so he knows he should know a lot about the strange fruit. Okay, now another thing I like to ask the brother is that don't come up here with that southern passive aggressive go along to get along, thinking that everybody else is supposed to do that just because you're getting your pockets hit with a nice check, and you're the type that the white establishment and the status quo love your type of Negro-ness-ism, because guess what? You stands out. You can go down there right now. You can speak articulate. You can put on your little cute suit, and you can go right back and report to them too. See, you're one of them type of don't have the testicle fortitude to really stand up to the establishment, because you are afraid that you're going to get punished, and you are afraid that you might be hanging from one of these trees up here other than being hung down there. That's why you appear, because it's beneficial. And I've noticed this, too. A lot of you educated southern Negroes is coming up here trying to get on the bandwagon, because I'm seeing a lot of out-of-state southern middle-class license plates, Lexuses, Mercedes, BMWs rolling around here, because you all know that this brother Pinback and brother Pullback done killed the old heads up here and the old bullshitters. And guess what?
you ain't going to get too far, brother. Do your homework and get back into your history books.
All right.
Peace out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can I respond to that?
Certainly. Now, let me just say, so you know, we're not being unfair and cutting you off. We've got approximately 6 minutes, 5 1/4 minutes left. Is that right, Mr. Allen?
That is correct.
Mr. Lawrence, go right ahead.
Well, I just want to say everything that he said about me personally is incorrect. However, what he has said about leaders that I've noticed here in the community has been correct. And so his assessment.
By the way, Ms. Lawrence, I have. How long have you been here with us? How long have you been in Minnesota?
I've been in Minnesota, it'll be 11 years in October.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
So finish your
reflection and dissertation.
Yeah. Yes. So, but, you know, he is correct. There are a lot of African Americans that are afraid to speak out and to say things that might not be popular by the establishment. But like I'm saying, you know, we need to put all of that aside. By me even being on the show, saying that I support guns, that I'm anti-abortion, you know, those types of things to say, you know, aren't very popular with the establishment, especially the DFL establishment. But that doesn't matter to me because I'm more concerned about my community moving forward. And I'm not up here to, like, run away from the South. In fact, I'm actually looking forward to going back home and doing work. My father does community work in Columbia. My uncle in Charleston does community work. He's been doing it for 30 years there. He's a president of one of the wards there. My family, even back during slavery times, were free blacks that were working for getting freedom and owning businesses in the city of Charleston. So it's kind of in my DNA. I think that it's important for community people when they're at odds with the establishment is to find a way around it. We can't always sit and complain and saying, well, these people aren't doing it. This isn't working.
Certainly.
You've
got
to work
certainly.
Another way. You just got to work around it.
Let me also say this to you. First of all, let us be clear. You will always be welcome on this program. So it's nothing personal here with respect to what's going back and forth. But I say that to you. Secondly, be advised that my ancestral home as a member of the so-called Edwards clan is Anderson, South Carolina.
Okay.
So it's a pleasure to talk to a fellow South Carolinian. Okay? All right, sir.
All right.
Feel free to call at any time.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Mr. Allen, as we begin to move towards rapid, this has been a most interesting program.
I'll say.
Your thoughts, Mr. Allen, as we begin to wrap.
It's pretty interesting. You know, I think that Patwin came on and kind of defended himself well. But then again, you know, I'm still stuck with the question, like, who are the leaders? I mean,
yes, I think that's why I kind of said, you know, we don't have an election per se for the colored leader, the grand potentate, the exalted ruler. I don't want to get too much into the Masonic thing, but you know what I'm saying. But we don't have that. But, you know, everyone would like to, this kind of goes out to the Masonic brothers, everybody would like to be able to kind of knock on the door, if you know what I mean, and pass over the threshold kind of thing. But, you know, that's basically closed off because, first of all, the average African-American in this enclave doesn't have the economic foundation to be able to spend all that time going to meetings, going down to J.D. Hoyt's and Monte Carlo's and eating good steaks and lobster and et cetera. They have to work or they're in an attempt to find a job, if you will. See, you've got to have some resources, and you look at white America, every white leader that you see in white America has significant, Mr. Allen, resources, and I think you would fully concur. You've done some studies on this.
Yeah,
they
yes.
have tremendous financial resources, which allows them to be leader. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And
you're
man, I tell
correct.
You, that makes a difference.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct.
Yes,
well,
sir.
With that said, Mr. Edwards, we're right under 2 minutes here. Any last words or comments before we shut it down?
No, I think it was an excellent program. I do once again make the offer to Ed McDonald. In that he has been released, if you will, from his vow of silence, if you will. Give us a call next week, Ed, and answer some of those questions that Mr. Lawrence said that you would have to be the one to answer. Okay? I think that would be the appropriate thing to do.
And with that said, thank everybody for listening to On Point. We'll be back next week at 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. Until then, be safe, be happy, and like us on Facebook.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall